Welcome, everybody, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the National Football League at sportsonearth.com, thecomeback.com, and the Cleveland Browns for scout.com's Orange and Brown Report. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Brian.
Good evening.
Good evening, Brian. We are 2 weeks into the NFL season, the 2016 NFL season, and while there were a few injuries of note in week one, it was nothing like what went down in week two. A lot of significant injuries, guys landing on injured reserve, guys going to be missing a few weeks, and three teams in particular have borne the brunt of this injury epidemic. Let's start, of course, with...
Before you get into that, I just want to say that it's funny because, like, we think of injuries as, like, I don't want, you know, X player to get hurt.
Or, I don't want any player to get hurt.
Of course you don't. I'm just saying, like I'd say most fans are, like, the certain guys on their team that they extra root for, they're really hoping they don't get hurt. That sort of, you know, everybody has that sort of reaction to things. But it's crazy because it is part of the game. It happens every year. There's always a ton of injuries. Obviously, this week it seems like it was worse than it's been, you know, or worse than it normally would be, especially for certain teams like we're about to mention. But I just want to say it's fun to keep it in perspective. You know, we talked about it before the season how there's a group that's, and we've talked about this before. There's usually a group that's like at the top of the league. There's a group that looks like they're really going to struggle all year, and then in the middle there's all these teams that are just kind of
churning along.
They're like they could do well this week. They might have a problem next week. Who knows? And that's why that's that parity that the NFL is about, and that's I think
that they're trying to achieve.
Right, but I think that's one of the things that makes the league so compelling, but one of the things that makes it so hard to get a feel for what's going to happen week to week is the fact that there's so many injuries, and
and
you never know how it's even if it's a key guy, obviously it's going to affect the team. But
well,
like,
injuries in general,
even minor ones, yeah.
or even guys who are maybe depth players or work primarily on special teams, you don't really see them making a big difference on offense or defense. That could still pose a problem down the line because, A, you know, special teams, football's a game of inches. Special teams is integral to that.
Absolutely.
B, your depth guy gets hurt. What happens
if a starter gets hurt?
It stretches your starters thin, it stretches your depth thin. And it really is
tougher to do the rotation that everybody likes to do, and
exactly.
for obvious reasons.
And you know, it does become the great equalizer because you can have this team that's coasting along, winning, but if it's two or three key guys on that team that are really getting them to these wins, and one of those guys gets hurt, it can change the complexion of an entire team's season.
Yeah, their whole season. That's exactly my point. And it's funny because, you know, some teams will stay healthy and they'll have a good season because of that. And some teams will get hurt and they'll have a bad season because of that. But nobody remembers it at the end of the season. Like, you might remember this one key injury was a problem for that team. They could never overcome it or whatever. But a lot of times it's just, you know, so-and-so, I expect them to be bad and then they were bad. It's like, well, yeah, they looked like they could have been okay, but then they lost four guys 1 week. And then, like, you know, they were never going to get there, you know. But nobody will remember
that. And that's why people stress, you know, once we start talking about the playoff, the push for the playoffs, week 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, the teams, you know, then you start talking about the teams that are healthy down the stretch.
Right.
Or teams that are getting healthy down the stretch and how much that is valuable when you're talking about playing football in December versus playing football in September.
Right.
But then we have, and we're going to talk about this here, we have certain teams that are very much behind the eight ball right now in terms of injuries. Let's start with the Minnesota Vikings, who, to their credit, are 2-0. Despite this rash of injuries, which began right before this season with quarterback Teddy Bridgewater suffering that significant knee injury that's going to have him out for the entirety of the season and puts the beginning of 2017 in question for him. Now they've also lost Adrian Peterson, their running back, the star running back, their number one guy. Tore his meniscus. He's going to need a full surgical repair. It could be 3 to 4 months. It could be 6 months. Until he's back. There are some conflicting reports as well that he tore his LCL. Hasn't been really confirmed either way. Was reported by Adam Schefter, but also other reports have disputed it. But either way, major injury to a major starter. Someone who the Vikings were expected to lean on quite a bit with Bridgewater out and Sam Bradford in as the starter at quarterback. Left tackle Matt Khalil also landing on IR this week with a hip injury. He had been struggling at the start of the season, mainly because he was trying to play through the injury, and that's not going to work out for him. So now TJ Clemmings will take over protecting the oft-injured Sam Bradford's blind side. Jerick McKinnon, by the way, will be the starter in place of Adrian Peterson, backed up by Matt Asiata, and the signed this week, Ronnie Hillman. The good news here, if there is a silver lining, we've seen it over these past two games, is that, you know, Adrian Peterson hadn't been all that productive in the first 2 weeks of the season. The run game in general for Minnesota hadn't been all that productive. Instead, and especially in week two with Sam Bradford's debut, it's the air show. It's Bradford and Stephon Diggs, and they're moving the chains that way and scoring points that way. And, of course, that really quality defense, who at least, you know, in terms of the side of the ball dealing with the most injuries here, it's not that defense that they – we're already going to be leaning on so much without Bridgewater.
Yeah, and so you could even make an argument that losing Khalil might even hurt more than Adrian Peterson. I don't know if I would buy that argument, but
I mean, I said
someone could make that argument at least.
Khalil has struggled, and I know that there are a lot of Vikings fans in particular who are dissatisfied with his performance at left tackle. Some people think that Clemmings will be an upgrade. Other people disagree. We're going to have to just see how that works out starting this week. But again, you have to keep in mind, you know, Matt Khalil is playing through a hip injury, and that's why he has been struggling, right. And that's why he's on IR.
Right. Yeah. No. It's definitely it's a blow to a team that, you know, a month ago, whenever, right before Teddy got hurt, a lot of people had them penciled into the Super Bowl, and you know, and we've seen in the first couple of weeks, we've seen why. It's because they have a strong team.
They have a very strong team.
And it
they
wasn't just Teddy
Bridgewater
and Adrian Peterson. Right. Obviously, it was everybody around those guys creating this strong team. And so then, but at the same time, obviously, your chances are you know, everything changes when Teddy goes down. You know, Sean Hill looked kind of what we expected, I think, in the first week, which is Sean Hill's normal self, which is he can do some things, but he's not an everyday starter.
We talked about that last week.
And so then we saw Sam Bradford come in and, like, wow. I mean, that was crazy. I mean,
that was some of the best football I've seen in the NFL out of Sam Bradford in his entire career.
Absolutely. And it's funny because I've heard a couple people say this could be the best situation Sam Bradford's ever been in the NFL. So
yeah, absolutely.
Being on this team.
But
so,
again, you know, when you talk about Sam Bradford, you also have that baggage of that injury history there. And concerning how things have gone so far for the Vikings.
Yeah, well, we'll knock on wood.
Yeah, we'll knock on wood.
Hopefully he can stay upright.
It would be interesting to see the career rebirth of Sam Bradford, and he can, you know, play 15 out of 16 games this season and look good and stay healthy.
Yeah, because, again, I don't know that how much he needs to do there. I mean, he and Stephon Diggs have an early chemistry, which is really good. Like you said, Adrian Peterson in the run game was struggling anyway. I think Jerick McKinnon can hold the fort for a while.
Yeah, we've seen it before.
And frankly, obviously the issue, to me at least, the issue with Adrian Peterson's knee, why it's going to take a few months, is just because the part is on back order at whatever manufacturer over in Asia that creates the parts that make up that bionic man. And so hopefully they'll get that manufacturing issue sorted out sooner rather than later. Maybe we'll see him towards the end of the season as they're rolling towards the playoffs, assuming that they're in the playoff picture, which I would guess that they probably still will be.
I will keep in mind, though, I want to mention this in terms of Adrian Peterson. You know, he's a 31-year-old running back. He's turning 32. You know, he has an $11.75 million base salary next year and an $18 million total salary cap hit. But the Vikings, if they cut him before the start of the new league year, they're off the hook for all of that. There's no dead money on that contract, which is the final year of his deal with the Vikings. So unless he, you know, maybe he's able to come back healthy at the end of the season, and they have some trust in him, and they, you know, there's no way, regardless, that I see him making $18 million next year. And he already has de-escalators that he's, roster bonus escalators that he's not going to reach this year, so he's already out another $2 million.
I mean,
I wouldn't imagine if they do choose to keep him, that they would restructure that deal and turn it into an extension, because there's no way Adrian Peterson's going to get $18 million in 2017. And it also looks quite likely that he won't be playing in Minnesota, in my opinion.
I don't think that's likely. I think that he stays there. I think that assuming
not on $18 million.
No, I mean, if the money's going to be an issue, I think that they'll work around that. But I don't think he wants to leave, and I don't think they want him to leave.
They would have to restructure.
I think they want him to stay there for his career. And
well, we'll see if he has to call it a career after this, though. This isn't the same knee that he hurt a couple of years ago. This is his right knee. But at the same time, he's not a 26-year-old running back anymore. I mean, he's almost 32. This is a different set of circumstances potentially for him and his recovery.
I get it, but I still will contend that the parts he was made with are very high quality and that he's not a normal running back. So, yeah, well, we'll just have to see how that works out. But I still think my gut says he'll be back at the end of December looking good. And they're not going to just – unless he wants to retire at the end of the season, they'll work out a way that he stays. That's my gut.
Another team that's been dealt a bad hand in terms of injuries early in this season is the Cleveland Browns. As we all know, Robert Griffin III, their starting quarterback, suffered a shoulder injury in week one that has his status for the rest of the season in question. At the very earliest that he could come back, if he does come back on the field this season, is week 10 against the Baltimore Ravens. Josh McCown, his backup, stepped up in week two, helped take the Browns to an early 20-0 lead over the Ravens before the Ravens came back, scored 25 unanswered to win. McCown, too, injuring his non-throwing shoulder, similar shoulder collarbone issue for him that Griffin has. The Browns haven't made any IR moves in terms of McCown at this point, calling him day-to-day/week-to-week. Needless to say, he's not playing in week three. Third-round rookie draft pick quarterback Cody Kessler will be taking over that job. He's the fifth Browns quarterback to start, by the way, in the last five games. Johnny Manziel, week 17. Austin Davis, week 17. Manziel, 16. Davis, 17. Griffin, 1. McCown, 2. Kessler, 3. That's not the only injury issue that the Browns have at the moment. Center Cameron Irving has a bruised lung. He is considered day-to-day, week-to-week. Rookie defensive lineman / linebacker, Carl Nassib, he has a broken hand.
One of the best-looking rookies.
One of the best-looking rookies they have.
One of the best-looking defenders they had this year so far in the young season. So
he has a broken hand that has required surgery. He's out for a bit. And now word is Corey Coleman, the Browns' first-round draft pick in 2016, wide receiver who scored two touchdowns last week from Josh McCown. He suffered a broken hand today in practice. His timetable is unknown. He's going to get that evaluated on Thursday to figure out the course of treatment. So that's a pile of injuries in Cleveland.
Yeah, and again, you know, this is kind of what I was alluding to earlier, is that like a lot of people, there was a lot of people saying that the Browns, oh, they'll be lucky to win a game this year. They're going to be pitiful this year, and like, I think we had a different feeling for them. We thought that they weren't going to necessarily win 10 games or anything, but we thought that there was going to be something there and all that. And then, like, now they're going to be hit with this rash of injuries.
This rash of key injuries, two
quarterbacks. You know, skill players like Corey Coleman. And
promising rookie defender and Carl Nassib.
Yeah, things that, like, some of the more promising things we've seen since the beginning of training camp, you know, is going to be affected by these injuries. And then
the Browns, by the way, 0-2 on the season.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. They're obviously 0-2, and their prospects are dwindling at this point of getting any sort of positive momentum in the season at all, you know. And again, you get to the end of the season, and everybody that said they were going to be terrible at the beginning of the season is going to say, see, I was right. And it's just like, well, yeah, but, you know,
a lot of things happened.
There was some promise there,
as well.
And then, you know, it just got quashed before it could even get started. So it's definitely unfortunate for a team like that that's really trying to turn so much around and was thin to begin with as far as experience and all that.
What's so frustrating to me about the whole thing is not only, you know, not only are the Browns being affected by injuries to starters this early in the season, significant ones at that, but it's also to these players upon whom there were many high hopes hung. You know, Corey Coleman you know, everybody was expecting this guy to be a stud. Now, who knows how much time he's going to miss with the hand. Carl Nassib, same thing with the hand. You know, everybody looking for that redemption narrative with RG3. He gets hurt. Josh McCown goes out there, looks really, you know, like the polished veteran that he is, but he gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not just it's all these guys that there's so, you know, there's people were kind of looking forward to seeing what these young guys could do.
It seems like they're losing these guys that are vital to them even having mild success this year.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
And because again, I think success for them, I always been or have been saying for a long time, success for them is going to be showing improvement week after week and being able to instill a new culture and not beat yourself. And if you're getting beat by better teams, that so be it. But like, you're at least going out there and fighting hard every week. And that would have been the progress we've seen. But like, now that's all extremely hindered because you're losing so much, you know, of the guys that do have any experience. And then it's going to be a bunch of rookies, basically.
The Chicago Bears, also an 0-2 team that looks fairly pitiful, even more pitiful, in my opinion, than the Browns, because the Browns have a ton of rookies and are on a dedicated rebuild. There are some rebuilding efforts going on with the Chicago Bears, as you could tell with all these, what they signed him this offseason kind of free agent work that they were doing. But yeah, they've also been dealing with a bunch of injuries. Linebacker Danny Trevathan, he needs thumb surgery. Not sure how long he's going to be out. Eddie Goldman, he has a high ankle sprain. He'll be out for about 4 weeks.
Pernell McPhee was already out.
Pernell McPhee is already out. He's on the PUP list. Lamar Houston, their linebacker, he tore his ACL and is on injured reserve. And quarterback Jay Cutler might be 2 to 3 weeks till he comes back. He also has an injured thumb, which may or may not require surgery. And if so, that could take longer than that 2 to 3 week timetable. So that's a bunch of things that aren't good for the Bears, especially because A, that offense has been struggling to get down the field and score points, even with Jay Cutler. And B, these are, you know, Trevathan, Goldman, and Houston, along with McPhee on PUP, those are four extremely key guys on defense
mm-hmm.
that they're not going to have for a few weeks here.
Extended period of time for Houston, for sure, yeah.
For the rest of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely rough. Yeah, isn't it funny? Like, it just seems like every year, Nothing changes about the player, but Brian Hoyer gets more and more opportunities to be a starting quarterback in the NFL.
It's just how the dice rolls for him, man. He ends up in places where he ends up starting.
He's just now he's going to be not inspiring people, fans in Chicago, basically.
Yeah,
so.
Essentially. and you can see these struggles for the Bears coming. If you paid attention to any of their preseason games, with the first team offense just really failing to score points, even against vanilla defenses that aren't really scheming towards any specific offense. Jay Cutler's out, you know, he's been out there and it's still not doing much. And mm-hmm. now it's Brian Hoyer.
Yep. Yeah, that's the thing. It's such a young season. There's all these injuries already after just 2 weeks, with obviously like even a spike this week. I mean, and that's not even counting like some of the other teams that had already had some injury troubles. Like Indy's like secondary has been a mash unit, and like the Lions had a rough week too, losing Amir Abdullah he's on IR for, I don't know if he's going to come back from that or if it's the rest of the season. I mean, we'll have to, that'll just remain to be seen. But they also, I don't know how healthy DeAndre Levy is. He went out in the game. They lost a couple of their secondary guys last week too. It's just you look across the league and there's just guys falling all over the place. And
yeah,
how it works every year.
Danny Woodhead, he tore his ACL. He's done for the year for the San Diego mm-hmm. Chargers. They're already out Keenan Allen with the same injury.
Mm-hmm.
So that's spreading that offense. Then they just signed Dexter McCluster this week. But then of course you have the curious case of the New England Patriots in week two. Jimmy Grapes, as I like to call Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Grapes. James Grapes. Jimmy Grapes.
I don't know if it's his middle initial is G, but that sounds good as James G. Grapes.
James G. Grapes. Went out and had a very impressive performance. He threw three touchdown passes in a quarter plus. But now he is injured. And he will be out for maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks. If 2 weeks, then we won't be seeing him under center for the remainder of the season as Tom Brady comes back in week 5. He has a sprained AC joint in his shoulder And now rookie Jacoby Brissett will be taking over as starter. And if Bill Belichick works his voodoo magic and this guy throws multiple touchdown passes this week, all you can do is just bow down to the king, right?
Yeah, and the Patriots are a good example of, I mean, obviously, how to deal with injuries, because everybody's going to have injuries every year, and obviously how to deal with it is to have the deepest team possible, you know?
Yeah, and that's really come in handy for the Patriots, is that they put together such a deep, talented roster that, you know, it was difficult for them to make their 53-man roster cuts and all that.
Right, because, I mean, not that Brady's out for injury, but they don't have his services for a few weeks, and then they lose his backup. Looked really good. And honestly,
and they don't have Gronkowski out there because he's been dealing with the hamstring.
And honestly, Brissett came in and didn't look, I wouldn't say that they looked prepared. I wouldn't say that they were the same machine with
of
him taking
not.
Over. But at the same time, that was like in the middle of a game. So it's like, you know, how much
right.
of that can you expect?
And Garoppolo got them out to enough of a lead that it was fine.
I'm just going to say that I still saw, even with Brissett at the helm, like, it seemed like they were able to be functional, maybe not drive to drive, but at least down to down for a while. And I think maybe with a couple of practices under their belt, like, maybe he could actually stem the tide for a week here. It's hard to say. I mean, that team's so good around him, you know, you know, it's basically beyond him to not screw things up and let everybody else win the game, you know. So, but we'll, you know, we'll just have to see how it unfolds here.
Other notable injuries, Jonathan Stewart, Carolina Panthers running back, is day-to-day with a hamstring. Doug Martin, running back for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he has a hamstring. He's out approximately 3 weeks at this point. We mentioned Amir Abdullah on IR with a foot. Could return. We'll see how that goes. I know he was meeting with a specialist. Arian Foster, running back for the Miami Dolphins, he's day-to-day with a groin. Doesn't look like he's going in week three. Could go in week four. DeMarcus Ware, pass rusher for the Denver Broncos, he has a broken forearm. He's out 4 to 5 weeks. And potentially there's something going on with New York Jets wide receiver Brandon Marshall's MCL, but it appears everybody is playing coy about that injury. And finally, Indianapolis Colts wide receiver Dante Moncrief has a fractured shoulder blade, which is a crazy injury. I can only imagine how that happened.
Geez.
And he's out 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, and that, again, doesn't help Indy, who was already dealing with a lot of injuries. So.
Exactly. And they're struggling, and they're 0-2 as well. And the last thing that they really need is less options for Andrew Luck to try to get that ball moving.
So mandatory, my elevation, my lyrics like orientation. So you could be more familiar with the nigga you facing. We must be facing nothing better than communication. Known the damage and highly flammable like gas stations. Sorry, I left that ass waiting. No more procrastination, give up the fate and get that ass shaking. I'm busting and making my.
So that's a good segue into talking about the teams that are winless through two games. While in week one, there were 12 games decided within a touchdown's worth of points, and 10 decided within a touchdown in week two, that's actually not good news for the 8 teams that are 0-2, because it doesn't matter if a game is close if you lose it. That is right. One quarter of the league is winless through week two, and some of these teams actually play each other this week. So we are guaranteed at least a few
to get off
0-3
schneid.
Teams.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a few to get off the schneid and a few to stay on it. So, it's never good. You know, that statistically, I don't know, what do they say, 12% chance of making the playoffs. You start 0-2 since 1990 or whatever that stat is, something along those lines. And so that's obviously not the start anybody ever wants to get out to. But I also don't think it's necessarily spells doom, because, you know, I think there's, as we'll go through the list here, there's probably a couple teams that are still pretty good teams, and, you know, it's a small sample size, so, you know, it also depends on who you played in your first 2 weeks. So
true. Let's first up talk about the team based here where we record, the Chicago Bears. I'm not feeling confident about their odds this season. I don't feel confident about them getting a win in week three. We'll talk about our week 3 minute picks later, but they are at the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday night, and I don't like anything about that. Getting that first win for Chicago, I don't see it in the cards this week, and I'm honestly not certain how many wins they're going to get this season. The Cutler injury, obviously, is a step backward. All the guys on defense that are out for various amounts of times, definitely a step backward. And it was already a team that seemed to have taken a step backward from 2015. So I am not very confident that the Bears are going to have a miraculous turnaround down the stretch.
I don't quite get it, what's happening here. And I was actually talking about this with a friend of mine that's a Bears fan the other day, and like he was doing a typical fan, just, you know, chalking it up to, oh, they suck. You
they
know?
Suck.
Right.
They just suck.
But that's what I'm saying is, like, if you just look at what's gone on there the last couple of years on paper, they bring in this young GM who has not a lot of experience, obviously, because he's young, first experience in this role, but, you know, came with good.
There's some good feels.
Yeah, there's good feels about what he might be able to do. And what's he do? He brings in John Fox, who's a coach that I've admitted that I've never been a huge fan of, but I respect his resume. He's been in the Super Bowl a couple times. He knows how to put a good team on the field. He's obviously accomplished and has that experience. He brings Vic Fangio on to run the defense, and we've seen Vic Fangio championing or heading up these great defenses, or at least very good defenses in the past. So he's obviously got experience and can do it. You know, Gase, for you know, he only had 1 year here that didn't ruin his reputation as an offensive guy, got him a head coaching job. So they're kind of restarting on the offensive coordinator situation. But they brought in some good coaches, at least. It seems like good moves were made there.
Sure.
And they brought in personnel last year. They brought in a lot more this year in the offseason. And it's just like, oh, yeah, well, those guys are pretty good. It seems like they should work.
Kevin White's healthy this year. He wasn't
Kevin
healthy
White's
last
back
year.
And, I mean, you can have your issues with him as a pick. He was very inexperienced when they picked him. But he had talent, and he's a work in progress. I wouldn't even expect much out of him until at least next year. But it's just like it seems like they were making decent moves. They hired decent coaches. They brought on decent free agents. They drafted – some questions, but some like, okay, yeah, I can see that, you know, and it's just, it's not working. And I didn't expect them to win the division by any stretch this year. I don't think they're nearly as good as Green Bay or Minnesota. And I don't think they're quite as good as Detroit even, talent wise, at least. Detroit can lose to anybody, but the Bears, it just seems like they've almost taken a step back, and I can't figure out why. It just doesn't. It doesn't add up when you're just looking at it like, boy, they should be creative. It's, you know, they went to the store and they bought a lot of good ingredients, and then they came home and threw it all in a pot, and it's turned into this mush. And I can't.
That's
quite...
because your head chef is Jay Cutler, and nobody has any kind of enthusiasm for his style of leadership. I think that has something to do with it, because you're talking about.
Yeah,
a new coaching staff that's inheriting this quarterback who should have a leadership role on this team, but it's all—it's often never seemed like that he's very interested in that kind of degree of what a quarterback does, and I think that has something to do with it.
I think
no one to rally around.
I think there's a part of that, and because I think that Jay Cutler is one of those guys that if things are going well, he's fine to have on your team. But if things aren't going well, he's not going to help you get out of those mental or emotional situations that are, you know, spiraling downward. Or anything. He's not the type to reverse that, you know. So I think that I don't know if he's necessarily the cause, but maybe he exacerbates issues.
Right.
But, yeah, it's weird looking at this team and just feeling like they should – be getting better, and then you watch what happened on Monday, and they just look lifeless. It's not fun to watch, you know.
Even
if you're not a Bears fan, it's not fun to watch this team just go out there, and it feels like they're going through the motions and not really inspired
or
anything.
You don't
want to
see that in week two.
No, right, exactly.
I mean, that's for a team that's given up, and it's week 13, week 4, you know what I mean? And gosh, I mean, if the Bears look like they've given up now, I hate to see what December looks like.
They still got time to turn it around.
I don't think they will.
Cutler's going to be off the field, so we'll see how much having someone else out there leading the offense might make a difference.
I don't think so.
Probably not. It's Brian Hoyer, so I don't know.
Next up, the Indianapolis Colts. They are 0-2. I'm a little bit surprised, but also not surprised. We've talked about this at length at numerous times on the podcast about how this team and Ryan Grigson, the GM, has let Andrew Luck out to dry since drafting him first overall in 2012. You know, we talked about the injuries that have sort of piled up in the secondary. Now Dante Moncrief is out for an extended period of time. You know, the offensive line not doing any better of a job protecting Andrew Luck. He's still getting beaten up out there. He took 5 sacks, and surprisingly it was not more when the team lost to the Denver Broncos in week 2. You know, because Andrew Luck is there, and because we have seen so many fourth quarter comebacks come from behind wins, game-winning drives, riding on his shoulders over the course of his career, and clutch play in general, it's hard to imagine that there isn't going to be a period of time in which this team wins games and plays well. And I do think that there is, you know, there is somewhat of an opening in the AFC South. At this point, the Houston Texans are starting to run away with things a little bit, but there's still opportunity there for the Colts to kind of close that gap a little bit. But I just don't see it this year. I think finally, you know, after years of the Colts kind of, you know, being kind of a middling team that can pull out these wins, we're finally going to see what their true colors are right now, which is a team with a fantastic quarterback and no help for him on defense, very little help for him on offensive line, and not a lot of help for him in the skill position areas of the field. So I'm not too convinced the Colts can turn it around. I know recent history says that this has been a good team, at least record-wise, but a lot of times that good, you know, that record-wise, you know, pointing to a good team hasn't really been the same as when you put the tape on, you look at the film, you look at what this team is putting forth. And there's not, I mean, from the slow starts to the fact that they can't finish, you know, and speed up after the slow starts in games, I don't know. I think this is finally the year where maybe the Colts organization wakes up and maybe they finally move on from the Grigson-Pagano thing in the offseason and try to do something good for a franchise that has a very advantageous situation at quarterback.
Yeah, but would they do that? Because they just extended both of those guys for like 4 years.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. Well, that's just the owner throwing away money.
True. I mean, I'll give you that, but because that doesn't...
This doesn't affect your salary cap. So it doesn't really matter what you do or don't do with the contracts of your
No,
GM
but you're right.
Coach.
I mean, of all the questionable decisions Grigson's made, then, like, as we mentioned a little bit ago, even some of these questionable guys that are around Andrew Luck are getting hurt. So, you know, it's not a good situation in Indy right now, and it's hard to tell how much they're going to be. If they turn around for a game or two or a quarter of the season or whatever, can that be sustained and turned into anything long-term for this season to be considered a success?
I don't think so.
Going to look like another one that's just kind of flipping away or slipping away from them? So
I think it's slipping away from them. I think this will be the year where it's a much bigger wake-up call. I mean, last year should have been a wake-up call. You know, Andrew Luck, you know, missing 9 games due to injury, why those injuries happened, you know, but the fact that, you know, everything that went down last year and that has gone down since they drafted Andrew Luck really made me think that at least one of Pagano or Grigson would have been fired, and everything seemed to look like they are both going to be fired, and that, you know, I was highly surprised when both men were retained for 2016, and I think we're really starting to see what kind of mistake that has become.
One word.
Ursay.
I did the
Will Leach Experience podcast previewing the AFC the other week. Like, have you seen Ryan Grigson? He looks exactly like a guy Jim Ursay would hire. next up, the Cleveland Browns. We already talked about how they've already been snake bitten by some very key injuries, particularly at the quarterback position. This is a young team with a really tough schedule this year. And now we've got Cody Kessler starting at quarterback for an indeterminate amount of time. You know, sure, Josh Gordon comes back in week 5, but Corey Coleman's out. We don't know for how long. The run game looks really solid behind Isaiah Crowell, but I don't know how long that they can lean on that with Kessler under center, because teams are going to know that they're going to run the ball. The defense.
Well, plus if they're getting behind, because the defense still has issues.
Yeah, then they're going to have to throw.
They're not
going
to be able to run the ball as much as they want.
They're not going to be able to run the ball. The defense still has issues. Losing Nassib, of course, not helpful. Though it is nice to see Joe Hayden out there, being close to pretty much 100% healthy and getting some key interceptions for the Browns over these past couple of games. But, you know, this was a rebuilding project. This was a team that wasn't expected to win a lot of games, and I don't think we're really planning on winning a lot of games and deep in their heart of hearts. Not like they aren't going to go out there and try to win, but they know what they were in for this season. This is not going to turn around anytime soon. I don't think that the Browns could go 0-16, but I think they're way closer today to going 0-16 than like halfway through week one before RG3 got hurt, even though they weren't looking that good. They're definitely, and it's not just because they're 0-2 and probably about to go 0-3. It's just all of these things.
The key guys they've lost.
Yeah, all these things just piling
everything's
up.
Everything's snowballing. Yeah.
I don't think they're going to do it, but I think among the teams that don't have wins right now, I think the Browns might be the top candidate to have the worst record.
Them or the Bears.
Them or the Bears.
Unless the Bears can really can do something positive. But regardless, yeah, the Browns, it's like we said, they had a tough coming into the season. They're doing a big, big overhaul there. They got rid of so many guys, and they were dealing with so many young guys. They had drafted 14 guys and kept them all on their roster. Well, 13 of the 14, you said, right, that they rostered. So,
well, two are now on the practice squad. Okay. So now, but
regardless,
still they have 12. They still have all 14 of them.
Right. So regardless, they're a very youth laden franchise right now.
Absolutely.
As far as their roster goes, and to start losing your key and more experienced guys when you have an already way too young team, it just doesn't spell good things, you know. So, I never thought this was going to be much of a season for the Browns record-wise.
No.
I was thinking that
I just wanted to see progress.
Optimistically, I thought they could get to 5 or 6, even if, you know, if you got RG3 and he was looking promising, and like they get Josh Gordon back, and it looked like they could have this kind of explosive offense going on. And obviously, that's all changed now. So, without all that, you know, again, that was the most optimistic view before,
yes.
And now that's changed. So yeah, obviously they're looking like they're gonna be one of they're gonna have one of the toughest years, win loss wise, and we'll just have to see. But again, you know, this was a rebuilding year all along. This shouldn't have been expected to be anything other than trying to lay the foundation
for the
future.
Yeah, there was nothing about this team that was ever going to be 10 wins.
So if nothing else, they're getting a lot of these young guys reps, and really that's going to be the key. That's what if you're a Browns fan out there, that's what you're going to have to hang your hat on, is seeing them improve week to week, especially the younger guys improve week to week, and
yeah,
changing the culture there what it's been.
The key at this point is Jimmy Haslam's level of patience, which we've seen be quite low in the past, but he seems way more interested in this particular coaching staff that he was very enthusiastic about assembling. So hopefully that will allow him to...
His impatience in the past...
He'll let this new staff buy... They'll be able to buy more time because everything is...
Yeah, well, for one, he should have learned from his impatience in the past. And two, not that he did, but I mean, he should have.
Well, his wife, D, is also more involved in the football operation side of things, and I bet that's going to help
sure that
cool him down.
But at the same time, I'm saying that in those situations, they didn't have quite these wholesale changes like they've made this season.
This is a very significant amount of change.
He couldn't have had much more expectations in his head other than this is going to be a long year with growing pains, and I shouldn't expect too much. You know what I mean? And unless he's completely whacked out, and potentially, I don't know.
I don't think he's completely whacked out. He's not. I don't think he's gotten towards Ursae.
He's not Ursae level.
Not yet. He is. I will say though, he does come off as a wannabe Jerry Jones sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Buffalo Bills are also 0-2. That's a surprising one. In response to this, the Bills have fired offensive coordinator Greg Roman and promoted Anthony Lynn to the same position, a move that hopefully will turn around what has been a really disappointing offensive outing these first 2 weeks. Last year, things seemed to be firing pretty well with that Tyrod Taylor led offense, not so much this year. I think with the fact that the players have responded so positively to Greg Roman's ouster, and the opportunity that Anthony Lynn is going to get to kind of open up this offense in ways that Roman kind of closed down, I think this will turn the Bills' fortunes around. I don't know if it's going to turn them around enough that they're on the verge of playoff contention like they were last year. But I think things will get better, and I don't think that they'll end the season any worse than 7-9, I would say. 7-9, 8-8, or 9-7.
No, I think this is the example of the other end of the spectrum, where this is a team that, while they missed the playoffs last year, they were obviously they were right there in contention for it. They've underperformed, I think, at the beginning of this year, but they've also had two tough games out of the gate, going to Baltimore, and Baltimore looks like they're kind of back to their old form of being a team that you should consider every week. You know, they're nobody to overlook by any stretch, but obviously their offense struggled down there. And then, you know, last week in the primetime game, Thursday night game, they got lit up a bit by the Jets. And while they were even, their offense was able to take advantage of that Revis situation, which everybody wants to talk about. And, they didn't do a whole lot other than that. So,
right.
And it's funny because, like, you know, Roman gets canned and then all the jokesters come out on Twitter and wherever and just talk about, well, you know, didn't realize he had so much to do with that defense, you know. And it's because obviously their defense has been a problem this year.
Yes.
And while they looked okay against Baltimore, you know, they definitely got lit up last week. And that's certainly something that, you know, Rex and Rob and whatever the other guy's name is, that's because there's three people running that defense.
Yes.
Which I'm not. I think that's a huge problem.
Rex has been sitting in on offensive meetings this week and wants a little bit more hands-on approach with the offense. And we saw what happened when Rex Ryan protege Mike Pettine tried to do that last year with the Cleveland Browns. It didn't go so well.
Well, I mean, the thing is, though, it's like you said, the players were kind of not against this move. And as much as they weren't necessarily talking bad about Greg Roman, but at the same time, it seems like they kind of felt like there was a bit too much focus on the run game,
right,
and there wasn't quite enough taking advantage of passing opportunities and things like that. So maybe this new offensive coordinator will open things up a little bit more, at least. It's still hard to say, you know, it's not like they're going to turn into some air raid team or anything like that. I mean, it's still the Bills, and it's still Rex Ryan, so they're still going to play defense and run the ball. But, you know, maybe they will stretch more because – statistically, Greg Roman has run the ball more than just about any offensive coordinator, I believe, over the past how many years, I don't know. But, like, he's heavy on run.
Yes.
And more so than most. So, you know, maybe this is a change that could actually help him. You know, we'll see this week when they play somebody, I can't remember, Arizona? No, that's, yeah, Arizona. They play Arizona. And, you know, we'll see what that new offense looks like, if it's any different.
Yeah. Washington is 0-2 as well. They were NFC East champions with a 9-7 record a year ago. You know, they franchise tagged Kirk Cousins, a smart move on a few different levels, in my opinion. They also went out and added cornerback Josh Norman, who spent the last 2 weeks on one side of the field, a.k.a. not the sides of the field, frequented by Antonio Brown and Dez Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
This week, however, he is going to be all over the field shadowing Odell Beckham Jr., playing everywhere except the slot where Beckham does not play, according to Washington and Norman. The one thing I only know this because I did a piece on Kirk Cousins for Sports on Earth this week, something that's really stood out that I find to be curious, and I know this isn't the entire reason for games that Washington has lost since 2015, with Kirk Cousins as their starting quarterback. But it's an interesting stat. In games in which Kirk Cousins, and he hasn't had a game all last season or this season where he's thrown more than two interceptions. However, every game where he's thrown two and every game but one where he's thrown one interception, and that game came in their fairly easy four-game win streak stretch at the end of last season, they've lost.
Mm-hmm.
And this season, he's thrown one pick in each game, one touchdown and two picks total on the season, and they've lost both games. Kirk Cousins is an erratic quarterback. He's playing erratically. The defense, You know, with Breland on the other side at cornerback, he's just getting killed while Josh Norman roams one side of the field. They don't really have that great of a pass rush. The run game is questionable, especially when you don't know what you're going to get out of the passing game. I don't think that Washington is going to continue to be winless, but I don't think that they're going to reprise being divisional champions. That's my take on that.
Well, it's the NFC East, so I mean,
but you never know because it's the NFC.
No. Again, this isn't necessarily trying to make fun of the NFC.
Right.
It's like we do probably too often on this podcast. But it's, I think, more factual to say there hasn't been a repeat division, that winner of that division in a long time.
In a long
right?
time, no.
So, like, you can expect
York Giants,
that.
And the New York Giants have put things together really nicely, and you can't rule out the Dallas Cowboys.
New York Giants
right now.
Look like they could be back to good New York Giants, which we've seen a lot over the past decade. You
yes.
know? So, yeah, no, it's the most surprising thing to me about the 0-2 start for Washington is mainly that they both these games were at home. And
yeah.
Frankly, I mean,
and most of their struggles came last year on the road. That Jets
right,
game.
That's right. That's where
I was
going.
Before the You Like That game, the Patriots game after the You Like That game.
That's where I was going. Is that a lot of his ups and a lot of his being Kirk Cousins, a lot of his ups and downs last year were like he was playing well at home, and then he'd go on the road and have a tough game and throw picks and they would lose, that sort of thing. I don't think he had a road win until the last couple of weeks of the season last year.
Correct.
So yeah, the definitely. For them to struggle as much as they have out of the gate with two home games, I think is
that's very disconcerting.
I think that's cause for alarm. Granted, I didn't think they had much of a chance against Pittsburgh just because you know you got a healthy Pittsburgh. You know, sans Le'Veon Bell still, but regardless,
but, I mean,
you have a healthy.
I mean,
Pittsburgh
D'Angelo
team.
Williams is like leading the league in
yeah,
rushing right
exactly.
now.
Exactly, and that's the point is that Pittsburgh's just too much of a machine for a lot of people to deal with. But then they dropped a divisional game against a rival with a rookie quarterback and running back. And, you know, that sort of thing, that's if you're taking that step, if you're taking a step forward from where you were last year, which was winning your division and looking erratic but good at times.
You should win at home.
You should win at home against a divisional team.
Yeah.
Especially one that's led by a rookie quarterback
yeah.
and running back. So. Yeah. I think that's definitely cause for concern. Again, I don't know that necessarily. I don't know that I think they're going to be the worst team in that division, but I also think that it's looking more likely that that's the case than it was than I thought going into the season, and that because like Philly even looks like. Granted, Philly's only played two. You know, the Browns and the Bears, who we just said probably are the two worst teams in the league.
Two worst teams in the league right now. Yeah.
So like, it's hard to say exactly how good Philly's going to be, but like. Philly looks at least a little more promising, and Washington's looking disappointed out of the gate. And Dallas looks like if Dak can hold it together well enough, that team is solid enough that they could do pretty well. And the Giants are kind of looking like they're back to maybe being the best team in that division right now. Again, 2 weeks into that division, so we'll see. But no, it definitely looks like it looks more likely that they could end up at the bottom of that division than I ever would have thought of in August.
I agree. The Miami Dolphins, 0-2. This is a team a lot of people have over the past couple of seasons been like they're going to turn the corner, even more so than the Jacksonville Jaguars
mm-hmm.
because they seem to just be that one step closer
mm-hmm.
to turning things around. It hasn't happened so far this season. The good news for the Dolphins, of course, though, is that they host the Cleveland Browns this week. all in my mind, almost virtually guaranteeing a Dolphins win.
Well,
I mean, we're talking Ndamukong Suh versus you know Cody Kessler here. But yeah, I mean, I'm you know, you got Adam Gase, this quarterback whisperer, and you got Ryan Tannehill, a quarterback who desperately needs whispered to, in order to
nice.
To,
like
to finally to finally fulfill that potential everybody has seen in him that he hasn't been able to really reach. But I'm not too worried about the Dolphins. I don't think the Dolphins are going to blow anybody away this year. I don't think that they're going to have 10 wins or 11 wins or anything like that. But I think they'll have a serviceable middle-of-the-road record, one that locks them into Tannehill for the future, for better or for worse, probably for worse. But something that will, at the very least, prevent Adam Gase from being fired right away.
Yeah, I mean, I don't – that's the thing is
there
I
is
still
a lot of win-now pressure on that team, though, that's
sure.
coming down from ownership
oh, sure,
and
sure.
the front office.
Well,
that's
yeah,
sure.
and because we've seen that – ownership there, you know, is weird, and they've made a lot
yeah.
of moves over the last several years, and there's been a lot of impatience there. So, you know, again, I think Gase needs time. I think they have a ton of talent on that team for sure, but like it does take time for it all to come together,
yeah.
And especially when you have a brand new coach. So a brand new coach that has no head coaching experience. So I mean, to expect a ton out of them right out of the gate is probably a bit, you know, overthinking there. But when it comes down to it, again, they still have a lot of talent. They still have guys that should be able to do well enough. I don't necessarily think this means anything for the long term of the season. I still think that the Patriots are obviously the class of that division, but I think that the other three teams in that division are pretty close.
They're very competitive teams.
I think it's a competitive division.
Yes.
I think they're I kind of think of it as a, you know, Patriots are one, and then the Jets maybe 2A, and then like the other two are kind of 2B and 2C.
I don't think so. I think it's Patriots, Jets, and then
the other two,
and then Bills, Dolphins. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
I don't think that they're 2A and 2B.
I'm saying the gap between the Jets and the Bills and Dolphins aren't necessarily the same as other divisions, the second team to the fourth team, sort of thing. You know
okay.
what I mean? I think it is a rather competitive division still.
Next, we have the Jacksonville Jaguars, a team that I am disappointed in for being 0-2 because we've had so many high expectations. This isn't the first year where we're like, okay, this is a good –
This is the first year everybody hopped on the bandwagon with us.
Everybody hopped on the bandwagon with us. But it's been fairly disappointing. I mean, the offense hasn't really been executing. Blake Bortles is putting a lot of that responsibility on himself for why the ball isn't getting down the field so well. You know, there's a lot of guys on defense, but they haven't put it together yet, which makes sense. I mean, it's a lot of – we're talking a lot of new faces. We're talking a new safety. We're talking, you know, you got Miles Jack out there.
Rookie linebacker.
You got Dante Fowler, who's essentially a rookie.
May as well be a rookie. Yeah, exactly.
Because he was hurt all last season. So you got a lot of disparate new parts on defense that are going to take some time to come together. And you see that all the time when any defense in the NFL gets a significant offensive revamp, that takes time to really settle in because you're talking about guys really having trust in each other, knowing the assignments, knowing where someone's going to be, trusting, you know, what the safety's calling out, what the mic's calling out. So I understand that's going to take a while to settle in. So I do think that the Jaguars will turn it around. I think that offense will get humming again. I think that defense will become more comfortable with itself. But I think by the point that happens, the Houston Texans are just going to continue to kind of coast forward with the win in the win column, and it's going to be too much of a gulf for the Jaguars to
too far to catch up.
To catch up by the time that they start really settling in.
Yeah, I mean, there's opportunities starting with this Sunday at home against Baltimore, and you know, that's the type of game where if they could win that, I think that's a good pelt for them to hang on the wall and be able to build some confidence. Because that's the thing, I feel like this is a team that's now amassed a lot of talent over the last couple of years,
but they don't know how to win with it. They still don't quite have that confidence
they're going to go in and win every week, and whether or not they do, but just the confidence that they can and will, you know, put their best effort out there.
Right.
I mean, you're right. I think disappointing, after watching what they did last week in San Diego, disappointing is really the only word you can use, because whether or not you thought they're going to win the game, for Jacksonville to be even considered a team that's going to be turning the corner and taking that next step and becoming more of a successful team, they got to be competitive in those sort of games, because San Diego is not a world beater. They're good.
And they're definitely in a better situation this year than they were a year ago,
absolutely.
Even with these injuries.
Absolutely.
Even with these injuries.
Absolutely. But at the same time, for Jacksonville, for them to be, you know, on that level of one of that middle tier that, like, you know, there's a bunch of teams in there, you know, you got to be able to show up and be competitive in a game like that. And if you win, you win. But if you lose, you know, at least
you showed up.
Yeah, and that was just it felt like they weren't felt like they lost the game before they took the field.
And finally, the eighth winless team so far this season, the eighth 0-2 team, the New Orleans Saints, which basically we're seeing a repeat of what we saw last year, what we saw the year before that. High-powered offense that can score a lot of points, defense that can't stop anything.
You can take the
Rob Ryan out of New Orleans, but you can't take the bad defense out of New Orleans, apparently.
Well, that's what's weird about this past Sunday's game is they went to New York, mm-hmm. and you know, again, New York's offense has looked like the good New York offense.
Right.
You know, Eli's been sharp and making passes, and they got Victor Cruz back, and, like, I don't think he's quite as explosive as he was, but, like,
but he's scoring touchdowns.
He's still savvy and can get open, and, mm-hmm. and Eli knows how to use that. So there's definitely, you know, good things going with that offense, and somehow the Saints held him to 16 points.
Right.
And even more, albeit even more flabbergasting than that is the fact that the Giants defense held the Saints to 13. That's
so surprising.
That's impressive.
Because that game had all the hallmarks of a high-scoring shootout.
Exactly. So that game was definitely odd to me for a lot of those reasons. But I agree that they're in a similar situation, especially you look what they did the first week. Even though they lost against Oakland, who came back in spectacular fashion to win that game in the first week, the Saints obviously looked more than competent. They look like one of the best offenses in the league,
which is something we've seen.
And then they just
let
Oakland back in and to win the game and all
right.
that. So that's a really good question: is how good can the Saints team get? You know, if they can pair that high powered offense with, you know, the kind of defense that will hold New York to 16 at home, you know, in New York, then, you know, maybe they can put some stuff together. But if it's going to be a sieve like it was last year, they're going to have similar results last year in that they'll get a couple wins, but it's going to be a tough season because they just can't stop anybody.
It's just shocking to me that you can have this offense that's led by quarterback like Drew Brees, an offense that can do 500 yards a week, a quarterback who can throw 5,000 yards a season, quarterback who can throw 30 touchdowns mm-hmm. a season, and it gets you 8 wins or 7 wins.
Right.
It's so surprising to me.
Yeah, it's
and I mean, and I understand that it's a quarterback-driven league, and, you know, a lot of people like to say, you know, if you don't have a quarterback, you don't really have anything. But, I mean, that's not always the case.
There's an example
of
having a great quarterback.
A great quarterback, an offense that can move the chains constantly, and it's almost all for naught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
and when you're, I mean, and then when you're playing in the NFC South, where of course you got the Carolina Panthers, their powerhouse, you got the upswinging Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you got, I don't know what you're going to get out of the Atlanta Falcons, but you got something there.
That division as like Carolina's the one, and then like the other ones are like threes. They're all threes.
No, Tampa Bay is not a three, and Atlanta's not a three.
No, I think they're all very similar teams. They have these offenses that can put up some points, but like their defenses are a crapshoot each week, and it's going to be a shootout each week. You know, I kind of feel like unless Tampa goes and plays Arizona like they did last week, and that's just not good for them because then they're just going to get killed. Because if their offense is going to get shut down, they're not going to have a chance.
Right.
You know what I mean? Now, I feel like those teams are those three teams are very similar. I think they can probably beat a lot of teams, but at the same time, their defenses can lose any game.
Good point. But, yeah, I just think that – I think the Saints, you know, when you talk about that offense, you talk about Drew Brees, you can't sit here and say, okay, this team's only going to win mm-hmm. 3 or 4 games this year because Brees, you know, he can – we know what he can do. But at the same time, it's just hard to imagine when you look at what this defense does and doesn't do, this, you know, getting above 500 this season.
Yeah.
As per usual.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that concludes our look at the 8 teams that are currently 0-2 through 2 weeks of the 2016 NFL season. We're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and we're going to come back with our week 3 minute picks. So
yes.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I got my mind made up. Come on. Get into it. Let it ride. Get with it. Tonight's the night. I got my mind made up. Come on. Get into it.
And welcome back to the F-Ball NFL podcast. It is time. Dun, 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 dun. It is time for our week 3 minute picks. That's where we. Oh, God. It's where we go through every game on the week's NFL schedule and discuss it, hopefully within 60 seconds, and make our picks.
Hopefully.
There are 16 games again this week. Bye weeks don't start yet, just yet. We are beginning, of course, on Thursday night. The Houston Texans travel to Foxborough to take on the New England Patriots with, of course, Jacoby Brissett at quarterback now that Jimmy Garoppolo is out with that sprained AC joint. You know, I think this is going to be a really good test for the Patriots at this point. You know, they do have that home field advantage, which is great news for them. But we're gonna, I'm really curious to see what kind of defensive pressure the Houston Texans send at the rookie quarterback to try to get one over on them. Also, Houston's offense has looked really good with Brock Osweiler slinging it out there to DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller. So I think this is going to be a real challenge for the Patriots, but I think that the Patriots are just going to pull it off. I mean, what we've seen over the past couple of weeks has been so impressive that I don't see why not they couldn't hold down the fort in primetime on Thursday. I'm going Patriots.
Yeah, this is Houston's, you know, looks strong. This will
they
be
do.
This will be their first road game, so we'll see how that affects things. Obviously, if Garoppolo can't go, they're gonna roll with the youngster Brissett. And
Garoppolo's not going.
So, I know they were trying to force him out there, but that's probably not gonna happen. So, but the question is, does that even matter? And you know, it's the Patriots at home on a Thursday night and prime time. This is probably Houston's best chance to beat the Patriots, considering the quarterback situation. But you know, I think this is probably still maybe a little bit too tall a task. Them. I'll take New England.
Moving on to Sunday and the early games, the Arizona Cardinals are at the Buffalo Bills. New look offense now that Greg Roman is out. Perhaps the Bills can turn their fortune around and get their first win of the season. You know, Arizona's a tough team to play regardless of whether it's at home or on the road. Buffalo does get the advantage, though, of course, of the Western team heading east for an early game. And that can't be underestimated, as well as just the existence of the home field advantage and the very loud New Era Field, Ralph Wilson Stadium. But, you know, Arizona's a really good team that was, you know, just steps away from trying to get into the Super Bowl last year. And if they are as good a team as they were last year, then they should be able to go on the road and win. So I'm going to go with the Cardinals because I think they are the better team.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll see an improvement on the offense for the Bills. Maybe they'll be passing a little bit more. And maybe there was a chemistry issue with Greg Roman and the rest of the coaches there, and that might have been holding the team back. I don't know. Their defense is still having issues. Arizona is a very complete team with an amazing offense who's going to test that defense to you know. I think Arizona is probably a bit too complete. I'm going to go with them in this game.
The Oakland Raiders are at the Tennessee Titans. The Raiders last week getting the smackdown in Oakland by the Atlanta Falcons in a surprise to me, in a surprising upset. I think that Oakland, though, this is a kind of a confounding team for me. The offense is highly capable, but sometimes it's kind of curious to see what's going on with defense. Jack Del Rio, the head coach, feels the same way, and he's going to take over defensive play calling duties, which I think he did last year and then relinquished them, but I can't be completely certain of that. I'm just going off of memory. I think Oakland bounces back here. I think there's a lot of things to like about Tennessee that we've seen from the offense, but I don't think that there's enough there right now to get this win over Oakland. I think Oakland gets this road win and bounces back.
Yeah, I'll give Tennessee credit for the comeback last week in Detroit, although they probably should have lost that game because Detroit squandered so many opportunities to score. They got hurt. There were so many penalties.
Yeah. I mean, the Titans had a lot of penalties too.
Right, exactly. But they were able to come back, and we got to give them credit for that comeback at the end of the game. And so, you know, there's something to be said about that. Oakland's D is really struggling because they had to. I mean, obviously, the first week they were against the Saints, and they had to come back and win. That was against a really good offense, so that kind of makes sense. And Atlanta definitely has a good offense, but that game last week was really disappointing, especially for Oakland's D playing at home and losing by or giving up that many points. This situation, I don't know. I think this should be an interesting game to watch.
I think this game will give us a good idea about where both of these teams are right now.
I'll take Tennessee, but I can easily see this one going either way. So.
We have the Cleveland Browns traveling to Miami to take on the Dolphins. Cody Kessler, the fifth starting quarterback for the Browns in the last five games. I think it's going to be a really tall order here. He's not going to have the services of Corey Coleman, most likely. We already talked about Carl Nassib. He's out with the broken hand. We don't really know the status of Cameron Irving with the bruised lung, but I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't go as the starting center. So all of that adds up for a really difficult situation for the Cleveland Browns. Miami, we know, plays tough at home. They play tough defense, led by Ndamukong Suh. I think it's going to be a really, really rough day for the Browns. I'm going to go with the Dolphins.
Yeah, this one's there's just not a lot to point at for Cleveland here and say that they're going to have a good chance to win this game. Miami is obviously further along in what they're doing as an organization.
Yeah.
They're at home. They're facing a rookie quarterback in his first game ever, who by all accounts is not quite ready.
Yes.
This one kind of screams Miami, but it is the NFL.
Any given Sunday, right?
Yep.
Baltimore Ravens travel to Jacksonville to take on the Jaguars. Head coach John Harbaugh haunted by Baltimore losses to Jacksonville in the past and doesn't want to relive that nightmare again. I think that Baltimore could go into Jacksonville and win. I think that Jacksonville might have a nice little bounce back here. I think that there are some weaknesses in that Ravens secondary that can help like Bortles rebuild his confidence and his connection with guys like Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns. But Baltimore is a healthy team now, and that was really what stymied them in 2015. It wasn't particularly that much of a lack of talent, but just the talented players keep getting hurt. And we've seen over the last 2 weeks that Baltimore really, you know, looks like they're getting back to that form. And, you know, like I said earlier about the Arizona Cardinals, if you're going to try to be a playoff contender, you have to be able to go and win these winnable games that are on your road schedule. And I think that the Ravens will beat Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, with the Jaguars, we're starting to get it, as much as I like to preach patience when it comes to coaching.
Sure.
We're getting to the point where it's almost starting to
It's an extremely hot seat for Gus Bradley.
Yeah, it's starting to point towards maybe the coach is starting to be what's holding them back at this point. You know, I think Baltimore, I kind of feel like they're back to where they've been, is having a stronger defense, having an effective offense, and Mike Wallace looks like Torrey Smith, but he catches the ball more.
Yeah,
and that could mean a lot for that Ravens offense. So I'll take Baltimore here. But I can see Jacksonville finally getting it together if they, you know, but I'll take Baltimore for the show.
Also, important note, Baltimore tight end Dennis Pitta went over 100 yards last week against the Cleveland Browns. Just want to say, you know, good job, buddy. You had some significant, he had some significant injury problems.
Good
fracturing and dislocating his hip 2 years in a row put his career in jeopardy, so it's good to see him back out there playing and playing at a high level. The Detroit Lions at their old nemesis, the Green Bay Packers. Packers are coming off of a loss against the Minnesota Vikings, in which that secondary got torched by one Mr. Stephon Diggs. So I expect pretty good days for guys like Marvin Jones and maybe even Anquan Boldin. But as we saw with Detroit last week, they can really make mistakes, and they've struggled in the past against Green Bay, both, you know, stopping the run, stopping the pass, being able to move the ball enough to get one over. So I'm going to go with the home team. I'm going with the Packers.
Yeah, the Packers played they played the Jaguars first week and didn't necessarily own that game, and then they got shredded by Stephon Diggs last week. So
yeah,
their defense isn't quite what I was kind of thinking they were going to be coming into the season. And I think Detroit's shown the ability to, I say it all the time, they've got the talent, they can play with anybody.
They can hang with anybody.
They're their own worst enemy. So
yep.
I will say that last year Detroit went into Lambeau and won for the first time since, I believe, 1991. And but I don't think that means they could do it 2 years in a row. So this is one of those situations where, you know, I don't know how I can pick the Lions here. But I wouldn't be shocked if they won. But
next, we have a very intriguing matchup with the Denver Broncos traveling to Cincinnati to take on the Bengals. Cincinnati fell last week on a last-second turnover that maybe wasn't against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Meanwhile, the Denver Broncos are just steamrolling over their opponents thanks to that incredible defense. And, of course, you can't discount the quarterback play of Trevor Siemian or that run game behind C.J. Anderson. These are two really well-matched teams, strong defenses. You know, quarterbacks that you know, I've said in the past, you know, Andy Dalton struggles when dealing with heavy pressure from opposing defenses. He got sacked 7 times in the season opener against the Jets, and the Bengals still pulled out that win. So I think that that's a really good you know, benchmark in Dalton's continued development. I think this is a fascinating game. I think that these teams are extremely well matched. You know, but I think I think I'm going Bengals here. I just like it. I just like it. I think AJ Green can get one over on Aqib Talib, and that's going to make all the difference.
Okay. And I think that I'm calling this one of my two prime matchups of the week. This should be an outstanding game. These are two very good teams. What is interesting, you did mention Trevor Siemian. He's looked very sharp, hasn't made a lot of mistakes, which is good sign for them. But this will be his first road test, especially against a very strong Cincinnati defense who can be confusing. So
they can be confusing. They can be very multiple. They can rush the passer. You don't know where it's coming from.
Exactly. So I expect this to be a very good game. I think these are two very good teams. I'm going to go with Cincinnati. But I'm just wanting to watch this one.
I'm just looking forward. I'm really looking forward to this game, honestly.
Should be a good one.
Another game that's really intriguing to me, the Minnesota Vikings are at the Carolina Panthers. You know, Sam Bradford to Stephon Diggs last week, we saw that was shredding up the Green Bay Packers secondary. And Carolina, you know, they got a couple of young guys. They got a young safety out there, a young cornerback, no more Josh Norman. So I'm curious to see how that affects things, and whether or not that Carolina defensive front can get up there and mess around a little bit with Sam Bradford, especially when you got Matt Khalil on IR and TJ Clemmings stepping in. These are very intriguing teams. Minnesota losing all of these key players, you still can't discount them. But I think, you know, Carolina knows how to defend their house pretty darn well, and they got the health advantage as well. So I'm going to go with the Panthers.
Yeah, the Panthers are rolling, and they played an outstanding game, but lost the first week. That was just a classic game.
Yeah.
Last week they had San Francisco and just bolted out to a huge lead, and they kind of let their foot off the gas. San Francisco got back in the game. You got to give San Francisco credit for getting back into the game.
But Carolina ended up with 46 points.
But then Carolina put their foot back on the gas and took over again. So Carolina is obviously very good. They're at home here. Minnesota has issues that we've discussed at length, but that D is really good, and this Bradford to Diggs thing could be for real. We'll have to see it replicated. This was my other premium game of the week. I think that the last one and this one are going to be the best ones to watch this week. This should be a fun one. I'll give it to Carolina. They're at home and a little bit more complete, I'll say, at this time, but it should be a fun one to watch.
For the third week in a row, we're getting an intra-NFC East matchup, this time Washington at the New York Giants. As we discussed earlier, Giants 2-0, Washington 0-2. I don't think Washington's going to go 1-2 this week. I think the New York Giants, the offense is playing really well. The defense is much improved from a year ago. They're at home. They understand the importance of maintaining this lead in this division that can always go in so many different directions as the season wears on. I think that, you know, Kirk Cousins, like, owning his mistakes and you know, the fade routes in the red zone and not running the ball, I think some of that's going to get corrected, but I think it's not going to be to the point where they can go into the MetLife Stadium and win there. So Giants.
Yeah, it's like we discussed earlier, they're 0-2 and they lost both those games at home, and now they get to go on the road to play the division leading Giants, who look pretty good. Their offenses look sharp. The Giants can look sharp and dull all at the same time, but they've looked sharp in this young season, and their defense just shut down the Saints last week. So it's on paper, this looks like that Washington should get mopped up. That being said, it's the NFC East, and that's right when something can happen. I'll pick the Giants, but you never know.
We have five games in the late afternoon, starting with the Los Angeles Rams at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Interesting game.
The Los Angeles Rams last week.
Yeah. Well, they won.
They won, but it wasn't. I wouldn't call it a quality win.
I don't know. It's a quality win. They beat Seattle.
It was 6-3 or 9-3, right?
Yeah.
Both of those teams' offensive lines are woof, and I don't think that's good news. For LA on the road against Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay's defense has a lot of talent, but they haven't really been, like, knocking it out of the ballpark. They really, I think, have a chance this week. Case Keenum, I think it's just a matter of time for Jared Goff, whether he's ready or not, just because Keenum behind that offensive line, it just hasn't been working. The Todd Gurley thing hasn't been working because of the line. I'm really concerned about the defense as well. This is a team I think we all have more optimism for, thanks to the little hard knocks bump. if you will. I think it's going to be tough for them, though. I don't think this is going to be like a blowout or anything for the Buccaneers, but I do see the Buccaneers winning.
Okay. And so I'll get to talk about this one now. I think this is a very intriguing matchup.
Passive aggressive.
I think this is a very intriguing matchup because the Rams, especially after last week's performance, look life less on offense and life full on defense, if that's a word. That's
sure.
not a word, but still.
But you also have to consider Russell Wilson's ankle and all of that
sure,
as a factor.
Sure,
sure.
But then at the same time, we expected the Rams defense to be pretty good, and they looked good last Sunday. And so then they're going to go play a team that offense – Jameis, when he gets it going, can really get it going. As long as he's not making mistakes and throwing too many picks, their offense should be really good. And their defense, I think, is where there's a lot of questions because they've given up a lot of points.
Which is so shocking because they have a lot of –
there's guys on defense, but at the same time, the defense as a whole hasn't necessarily been playing really well.
Right.
So it should be an interesting game. It's Tampa's at home. I'll give them some points for that, I guess. I'll take Tampa here. This should just be an interesting one to watch, though, in my mind.
More divisional action, this time in the NFC West. San Francisco is at the Seattle Seahawks. Again, we just mentioned Seattle losing, only scoring 3 points, and only one offensive touchdown through two games for the Seattle Seahawks this season. I'm gonna hit a very small panic button, only because this is week three. But that Russell Wilson ankle injury, if y'all recall a couple of years back, Ben Roethlisberger had an ankle situation that limited his mobility and his ability to also be comfortable while throwing in the pocket against the San Francisco 49ers, I believe on a Monday night game, and he was just getting lit up back there. And I think that we're seeing a similar situation with Russell Wilson and that Seattle offense. San Francisco went to Carolina and, you know, took him to the limit before Carolina put the foot back on the gas last week. And I think that Niners defense, you know, it's in a bounce back year. I'm going to call upset alert here. San Francisco is going to go into Seattle and win, and people are going to be writing think pieces all next week. What happened to Seattle?
Which I believe everybody was talking about last year in September.
Yep.
If you recall, they were 2-4 last year to start first 6
oh,
weeks
yeah.
of the season. Now I think this is an interesting one because San Francisco has surprised. They really dispatched of the Rams in the first week, and they fared, even though, like we said, they had to come back to get within a touchdown before Carolina took over at the end last week. It was still something to see them come back and do that, and so I think there's more talent here than people maybe had given credit for at the beginning of the season. Chip's not exactly done. And Seattle certainly having issues with Russell Wilson's injury. With that, Seattle's at home, and I don't see them losing a divisional game to San Francisco at home.
Next, we have the New York Jets at the Kansas City Chiefs. This game really intrigues me, too. I think I could put that up.
Yeah, this could be fun.
One of my top three games of the week here. I think it's going to be fun. I think I'm going to give the advantage to Kansas City. It's not just the home field advantage in the loud land that is Arrowhead Stadium. But, you know, we're all talking, oh, Revis lost a step. Maybe he has. I kind of think maybe he has. I mean, you get older, you get slower. It happens. It's
yeah.
football.
That's not going to change how good that defensive front is, though.
That's not going to change how good that defensive front is. But I do trust Kansas City. I trust their offensive line. I trust their run game. I trust Alex Smith. You know, their defense hasn't been as strong as it has been in years past. You know, Justin Houston still a few weeks away or a couple of months away from coming back. And they're kind of trying to fill in on pass rush without him. But I think Kansas City gets this win, especially because I'm not entirely sure of the status of Brandon Marshall, if mm-hmm. there is an MCL thing there. And if he can't go or if he's limited in any way, then definitely I'm going Kansas City.
Yeah, even if Marshall can't go, you got to bring up this kid, Anunua, who's kind of blown up
yes,
this year.
Yes, Quincy Anunua.
And he's really looked like he could carve out a role there on that team.
Yep.
I still think that, like we said, that Revis's issues aside, I still think the Jets D is one that is formidable. I think Kansas City is a very solid team with a good defense and a solid offense. And it's always tough to go to Kansas City and win. I'll take them because they're the home team, I guess. But this should be a fun one. This should be a good matchup.
Next, we have the San Diego Chargers traveling to the winless Indianapolis Colts. You know, obviously we know all about the Chargers' injury issues. First Keenan Allen and now Danny Woodhead, but they've been having a really solid run game with Gordon. With Melvin Gordon. You know, things are going nicely there. You know, I'm gonna go with the Colts. No, I'm not going with the Colts. I'm going with the Chargers. I don't think that welcome to 0-3 Indianapolis. The chickens are coming home to roost this year.
Well, I mean, it's just tough to pick Indy in this situation. I mean, they're at home, yes, but their D has been struggling, and San Diego's offense both of these weeks against, especially
even
against
with these injuries,
even with before some and even after the others, you know, they've gotten out the hot starts. He's been throwing the ball over the place.
Philip Rivers is throwing the ball.
Travis Benjamin looks like he could fill the void for Keenan Allen as being the lead receiver on that team.
And I actually think that the Dexter McCluster signing this week in response to the Woodhead injury is a savvy move.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think Indy, I feel like they should be able to turn around at some point. I don't know that it's going to be this Sunday against the Chargers, who look pretty hot to start the season here.
It's going to be interesting AFC West. That's what I think.
Yeah.
And finally, for the late afternoon games on Sunday, the battle for Penn's Woods. The Pittsburgh Steelers travel to Philadelphia and take on Carson Wentz and the Eagles. I think this is the game where Pittsburgh's pass rush finally shows up. They haven't been doing a lot of blitzing. They haven't been rushing the passer a lot in the first 2 weeks. But now they got the spoils of a rookie quarterback to mess with. And I'll tell you, no matter how much poise and preparation Carson Wentz may have, this is still his third game in the NFL. And he's going to get welcomed, I think, finally by a Pittsburgh team that's going to get a little pass rush in order. Plus, you got that offense with Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown and the fact that D'Angelo Williams doesn't look one bit his 33 years of age. I am definitely going Steelers here. I'm sorry, Philadelphia. You're just the next duck in the row.
I'd say Carson Wentz has been one of the good stories of this young season.
I agree.
A lot of people are giving him praise, and that's due. He's done a great job.
I agree.
Their defense has looked improved over what they was last year, for sure. They look like they could be a contender in that NFC East division. But I wrote down a couple notes for this game. And it's pretty simple. Pittsburgh's a machine right now. Philly hasn't played anybody tough yet.
Yeah, that's the thing. That there hasn't been a real litmus test, to really see where the Eagles are, where Carson Wentz is at. And this is going
to
be the week.
There's no reason to pick against Pittsburgh right now. If Philly wins this game, then there'll be lots of things to talk about with Philly. And that kind of changes
changes a lot of things.
But, yeah, this is I would pick Pittsburgh here.
And I mean, and also consider the fact that, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals did a good job of shutting down Antonio Brown last week, and the Steelers still managed to get that win.
Mm-hmm.
Guys like Sammy Coates, Eli Rogers, Jesse James, these guys have been stepping up as well.
Oh, and that reminds me, before we move on, the last game we were talking about, the San Diego and Indianapolis, that cornerback for San Diego, Verrett.
Yes.
He's been playing lights
Jason
out.
Verrett, yeah,
and
he's
that's
great.
That's going to make it even tougher for Indy. Him taking out.
Yeah, he's a very, good,
Hilton,
very
sure.
good cornerback.
Yeah.
Sunday Night Football.
On NBC.
On NBC, the Dallas Cowboys playing host to the winless Chicago Bears. And yes, I know Dallas and Dak and all of these things. But, you know, there's Dez Bryant. There's Cole Beasley.
Cole Beasley.
Oh, man,
we're going to get to hear Al say it.
I was going
to
say,
that's gonna be outstanding. Cole Beasley.
I don't think Chicago's going in and winning this game. Brian Hoyer's not going to Dallas and winning this game. Jay Cutler isn't going to Dallas and winning this game. That defense with those injuries ain't going to Dallas and winning this game. Dallas is winning this game.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas, they played a tough game the first week but lost to the Giants at home. And then they had a big road win against divisional rival last week. So I think that's a good confidence builder for Dak and
yep.
Zeke and some of the younger guys on that team.
Absolutely.
The Bears are just a complete and utter mess right now, and to think that they're going to straighten that out
on Sunday Night Football in Jerryland
is probably fool's gold.
Yes.
So yeah.
And finally, Monday Night Football in the NFC South, we've got the Saints hosting the Atlanta Falcons, two teams that are. I got a lot of questions about. Got questions on defense for both of them. With New Orleans, it's just stopping points and yards. For Atlanta, it's that pass rush. Will it ever really come forth? To me, this screams pick the over. This is a shootout.
I have my notes. I have shootout in capital letters.
Yeah. It's basically capital letters shootout. In that situation, to me, it's kind of a pick 'em. And when you got a pick 'em in a shootout, why not roll with the home team and let's go with the Saints?
We're certainly not advocating betting because the Vegas is really good at setting lines, and this could very well be under just because that's how it works.
Sure.
That's how betting
absolutely
works.
Absolutely.
on paper, this looks like a shootout.
But I think New Orleans – I also just don't – I don't think – just based on the way that the NFC South is and the way this division is shaked up, and just because it's the Saints, I just don't see them in particular starting 0-3.
No, I hear you. And
especially with two of those games being at home.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And like I said, I've kind of – both these teams seem real similar to me. Their offenses are going real well right now. Their defense is less so. Even though New Orleans D played a little bit better in New York last week by only holding them to 16 – I think just the way these two teams are shaped up, plus the history we've seen them have, this just sounds like offense party.
Offense party to close out the week. So those are our week 3 minute picks.
Minute picks.
So again, wrap them up and burn them, or whatever it is.
Wrap them up and put fish and potatoes in them. Or something like that.
Yes, write them on some parchment paper, put some fish and vegetables in it, and bake in a 425-degree oven for 15 minutes or until the fish is mostly opaque all the way through. we're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and we'll wrap this thing up for you, just like a fish in parchment, so stay tuned. Play your game of Russian roulette and have a blast. Hey, yo, lyrical guests spitting the criminal tactics. Non-believers get my dick and genital backwards. Let's face it, there's no replacement. Taste this, mad underground basement. Shit I'm laced with. Avalanche on your whole camp when I'm splitting. Fuck Dr. Who spot, bitch, don't get it twisted. I got connects like Federal Express to get the fresh package of blessed. The dogs can't fetch. Well, that about does it for this sweet and savory edition of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. You can find my work covering the National Football League at sportsonearth.com and thecomeback.com, and my work covering the Cleveland Browns at scout.com's Orange and Brown Report, which you can find at cle.scout.com. You can also find me on the Twitter machine at @fball_Andrea, @FBALL_Andrea, where I have the lovely little blue check mark.
Yeah.
I am a real girl.
You're verified to be real.
I'm verified.
And I'm Brian, not Brad, like the lady at Starbucks called me
Brad,
the other day.
Like that car, that horrible commercial. And the
certainly not like the car and the horrible commercial. In addition to being the co-host of this podcast, I also produce this podcast, and I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Well, enjoy week 3. These seasons go by faster than you can imagine. Can you believe it? Week 4, after week 4, we'll be a quarter of the way through the season, and Tom Brady and Josh Gordon will come back.
I can't believe it because we say the same thing every year. Man, I can't believe we're already there.
I can't believe we're already there. Well, enjoy week 3, and let's hope that there are no more significant injuries to befall any
please.
Of the teams around the league, because I think we had enough for week 2.
Certainly nobody else on my fantasy team.
Nobody cares about your fantasy team. That's a rule.
No, I'm not saying they should. I'm just saying please no more injuries to
absolutely. So, again, everybody, enjoy week 3, and we'll be back next week to talk about all the things that went down. Of course, preview week 4 and make our minute picks. So, until then, thanks for joining us. We appreciate each and every one of you.
Later.
Peace. I am Mr. Rebel. Listen.